Welcome.
You're listening to Amped Up, the AMPO podcast. I'm Ellen Zavisco, Transportation Planning Manager with AMPO, which is the Association of Metropolitan Planning Organizations. For this episode, we're speaking with Adam Argo, Principal Planner with the Oregon Department of Transportation. We're focusing today on scenario planning. We'll talk a bit about what the Oregon DOT is up to in that area and how MPOs have been part of the planning. We'll also get into how MPOs are involved in the implementation as well. And with that, my first question to Adam is, tell us a bit about your career, what you do at ODOT, and how you came to work there.
Thanks, Ellen. It's good to be here. So I have about 25 years of experience as a transportation and land use planning professional. I would say it's a pretty even mix between working in the private sector and working in the public sector. I moved to Portland, Oregon in 1997, following completion of my master's of urban planning from the University of Kansas. Probably no surprise to many people who in their education and training and planning across the country that Portland was a topic of study. And it became a particular interest to me also based on the fact that you're near a mountain and the beach. It was great to come out here and get into the career, and it took some twists and turns, but I started with a private consulting firm supporting development of local transportation plans, corridor plans. Most of my early career was really having a supporting role performing technical analysis procedures, particularly geospatial analysis, utilizing geographic information systems, software tools, in tandem with spreadsheets and database development tools. And from the private consulting firm I started with, after a couple of years, I worked for the Transit Authority for the Greater Portland area. I was a project planner in their capital projects. I was involved in efforts to introduce efficiencies in frequent service lines, particularly in neighborhoods where we were directing investments for more lower income and communities of color to build their ability to have access to jobs and training. I also was involved in the integration of bicyclists and pedestrians with the transit system. That job evolved after I left there, but I learned a lot with that role at TriMet. And then I moved on into the private sector again with a firm with their corporate headquarters in Portland. They're called David Evans and Associates. And I worked there for 12 years, supporting a wide variety of different planning projects. Some of them were roadway design, some were transit development, service planning, some were integrating bicyclists and pedestrians in networks types projects, and moved a little bit from a lot of geospatial analysis and technical support to project management. And with that, I kind of honed skills on how to be involved in leading development of policy programs and implementation of plans, which served me well when the opportunity came to join the Oregon DOT, which I did seven years ago now. And there, as you noted up front, I'm a principal planner. I am essentially the lead long-range planner for the state. I lead efforts for statewide policy plans and the series of modal and topic plans that fall underneath what we're mostly going to talk about today, the Oregon Transportation Plan. I have had great experiences with the Oregon DOT because I like to say I'm paid to think about how to think about the future. And it's a pretty privileged situation for me to be in. And there's any number of challenges and uncertainties ahead. So it's great to be here to be able to talk about some of the aspects of how we think about and try to do something about these challenges we face.
That's great, Adam. It sounds like you've had a winding path getting to where you are, done a lot of, a little bit of everything, a lot of some things. But as you said, thinking about uncertainty and different outcomes that are possible, that leads right into the work that you've been doing in scenario planning with the Oregon DOT. So obviously, we'll get into how the MPOs were involved in a little bit. But first, could you set the stage for us by telling us about the Oregon Transportation Plan? The plan was just approved this last summer. What did the Oregon DOT set out to achieve with the plan?
Sure. By the way, I may use the acronym OTP sometimes for shorthand for the Oregon Transportation Plan, but I promise I won't go into myriad acronyms, which us planners are wont to do. The Oregon Transportation Plan defines the long-range transportation policy looking out to the year 2050, considering the movement of people and goods across the state. So the plan focuses on users and uses of the system. It's about balancing diverse need, guiding investments, programs, and processes. It does identify a vision, and I'll talk about that in a little bit, and actionable direction for all entities that deliver transportation services in the state. So it really does encompass state agencies, a regional governments like MPOs, and local governments, as well as transit agencies and other entities. The OTP directs the work of the Oregon DOT, and it was adopted by the Oregon Transportation Commission. A little background context: in Oregon, the governor appointed members of the Oregon Transportation Commission direct the agency. What we wanted to achieve was a plan that can work for all of Oregon. It recognizes distinctly different needs and issues. There are many different users and functions of the system. Some policies can't be one size fits all. We really had to consider the context of where people were, both in their communities, also in terms of the private sectors of industry, things that are involved transportation, and different demographic groups and populations. Developing a plan that guides the statewide transportation investments with an approach for implementation over the next 20 to 25 years was another key objective. And then the Oregon Transportation Plan has a short-term plan to direct ODOT called the Strategic Action Plan. Talk a little bit more about that. And that was a basis for us to understand current priorities and considerations, but we needed to build from other foundational statewide plan goals and visions. There are several to develop an Oregon Transportation Plan as the highest level policy plan guiding the state. That explicitly considers maintenance and preservation, state of good repair, safety, equity, multimodal mobility and accessibility, freight and goods delivery, climate change, environmental sustainability, and strategic investments with and need for sufficient funding. Another objective was to meaningfully consider public comments, conducting effective and efficient public engagement. We sought to develop a vision, policies, goals, strategies, and implementing actions to be resilient in the face of uncertainty, addressing key trends, drivers of change, and desired future outcomes, and to develop a plan that recognizes the Oregon Transportation Commission's and the Oregon DOT's direct authority and level of influence regarding the management of the state system in relation to our partner government agencies. And that actually does include the federal government, other state agencies, regional entities like MPOs, local agencies, and also private industry. The vision is all about setting a course for a transportation system we want to see in 2050. So the Oregon Transportation Plan's vision states, Oregon's transportation system supports all Oregonians by connecting people and goods to places in the most climate-friendly, equitable, and safe way. I'll note there are six goals that came out of the work on developing the vision that are how we organize the policies and strategies in the plan. There are myriad policies and strategies in the plan, but I'll just note the goals being economic and community vitality, social equity, mobility, stewardship of public resources. That's about funding and revenue. Safety and sustainability and climate action. Drawing upon this vision statement where we say at the end there, connecting people and goods to places in the most climate friendly, equitable, and safe way. Climate equity and safety are what we call the priority lenses to guide the decision-making for the Oregon Transportation Commission and Oregon DOT leadership in terms of how they prioritize investments. Those three lenses are to front all of the decision-making for that. And it's also to reflect what we seek to do with our agency partners in terms of their priorities and decision-making.
So that's a pretty big task. Scenario planning played a role in putting this plan together. Can you tell us more about that and specifically about the strategic model that you used, which is called Vision Eval?
There are two basic types of scenario planning that we needed to consider which version would we want to use. And that is normative scenario planning versus exploratory scenario planning. Exploratory scenarios ask the question, what can happen? In contrast to normative scenarios that are really framed around how can a certain target be reached? The analytical tools our project team utilize enabled robust state of the practice exploratory scenario planning. Here's where I get to give a plug for one of our consulting partners who had a strong role in the scenario planning development, and that's RSG. I just really need to acknowledge I had a lot of incredible help and expertise, as well as my own colleagues in our analysis unit. And to talk about scenario planning, I like to frame the thinking that I worked on with other colleagues behind how we would really set to do this, even before just thinking about the technical tools, considering key aspects of scenario planning's approach in updating the plan. One key resource, it's a book, Scenario Planning for Cities and Regions. It was published in 2020 by Robert Goodspeed from the University of Michigan. And that talked a lot about aspects of complex systems thinking that can inform the development of scenarios, and recognizing that our complex system is about different relationships. And the number and the complexity of these networks in that system that are both physical and they're artificial. We recognize transportation as a system. We recognize water, utilities, but we also needed to consider abstract, legal, institutional, social, those less visible ecological systems, because they're just as important and germane to the thinking in developing a scenario planning approach in the Oregon Transportation Plan. From the aspect of developing a resilient plan, myself and my colleagues tried to show how institutional networks of governance interrelates with more easily measured and observed systems of infrastructure, material goods, and energy. Another aspect of what I tried to think about in front of scenario planning is how I position the prescriptive and the descriptive. So prescriptive will ask, what information do we need? How do we make informed choices and come to agreement? That's where we can develop things such as project charters, project schedules, the media communications, and background report work that led up to the start of the Oregon Transportation Plan process. Then moving to thinking about the descriptive, and that is asking questions such as, what's happening in transportation? How's the system working or not working for you? So that's where our engagement with the public really has to get their feedback, how they talk to us about their lived experiences every day in transportation is extremely important. And where we put that is why I talk about the positioning, prescriptive and descriptive, and then back to prescriptive, where it's given the information we got from that descriptive information that comes from, say, virtual open houses and surveys, focus groups too, then comes back to, what should we do and what could happen? And that's where scenario planning comes in, and where we also need to have a two-way between the technical work that we've done in scenario planning and how we bring that information back to the public and get their feedback on their preferences and what they think about what we've presented to them. The third little element I want to talk about in front of scenario planning before getting into the tools is that we consider key drivers of change. That is exogenous pressures that shape changes to our transportation system. And we identified six of them, and I won't go into all of them, but a good example is the disparity in changes to demographics from a state, the context of the state, and the industry composition, particularly aspects of what's different between rural areas and urban areas. The disparities are visible in how the system impacts people. For instance, rural areas experience out-migration. That reduces overall transportation demand. In Oregon, urban areas are experiencing increased populations. So that strains the system and creates dramatic increases in demand. So there's an example of some of the things that go into what we were thinking about in terms of scenario planning. So we also know that we set out to have an outcome-driven plan. And with outcome-driven planning, the exploratory scenario process has some elements that are common in the normative scenario developments and other things commonly done in the practice, but where we evaluated a baseline future. We determine measures of effectiveness and a range of feasible inputs in the future years. But this is where we get into the what ifs and look at how well are we going to be able to achieve the goals in the plan. Is when we evaluate an extensive domain of possible future scenarios with these exploratory tools and identify which scenarios will achieve those goals. There's a handful of inputs we can test. Our tools are very, sophisticated. They can get at questions around setting toll prices and specific amount of roadway miles or of provision of transit. Also, we look at land use scenarios. But then comes the exploratory aspect of a range of investments and policies. We get to think about from a baseline, what then would 75%, say to 150% of transit service look like? What would a 50% to 150% of baseline parking cost look like? And we get to our real basis of using strategic modeling to explore hundreds and actually thousands of scenarios. Strategic models, they provide a lot of value in the early stages of the planning process. And they actually were instrumental in helping us identify the visioning aspects in the plan and the goals and objectives. Also, they can be worked into public engagement and what we were calling blue sky thinking. What's possible? What are the ranges and topics that should be evaluated? And a strategic model can be built and used to test a lot of different options that might exist. And what is the key strategic tool that we use? That's what's known as Vision Eval. And Vision Eval is the most robust quantitative strategic model we know in practice now that can be used for scenario planning. It is supported through actual pooled fund partnering with the Federal Highway Administration and other state DOT and MPO entities that have been involved in its development. I am somewhat proud to say Oregon is somewhat considered a leader in the development of Vision Eval and the applications that have been used in particular for long range planning.
It's an econometric framework
for monetizing cost, thinking about time too in consideration, and out-of-pocket expenses down to the household level, considering a travel budget and looking at how certain policy levers, certain impacts like congestion charges, fuel taxes, investments in electrifying the system, what's that going to mean down to the household level? Vision Eval is sensitive to land use, operational tactics, and policy tactics. That's thinking about things such as transportation demand management, the pretty much acknowledged phenomenon of induced travel demand. Signal coordination and teleworking are also factors that Vision Eval can consider. It runs pretty quickly. So we're able to run hundreds of scenarios in a pretty short time frame, because it's not about trip assignment on specific networks. That's more of a tactical and operational level tools that we consider in implementing plans. But at this stage of developing a long-range plan, that's where Vision Eval as a strategic model is really effective, impactful, and the most needed tool that we utilize in considering our vision and our goals and policies and potential what ifs. It allowed us to do what we could call goal seeking. It's really about how are we measuring to our desired goals. And it really informed the development of the four primary range of econometric, fiscally oriented scenarios that we developed in the Oregon Transportation Plan for the Oregon Transportation Commission to consider in terms of which scenario do we recommend get that really was about an equivalent per mile fee per Oregon resident level that is needed in order to best achieve the desired outcomes, the goals, and the plan.
That all sounds pretty complex. That's probably an understatement. And yet you still, as you said, you had to share information along the way with the public to keep them engaged and to get meaningful feedback from them. What was that process like? How did you boil this down so people could understand it and give you meaningful feedback?
That was so instrumental. And here's again where I get to call back to how I knew prescriptive and descriptive interaction really needed to be effective. And what we wanted to do prescriptively was be able to tell the story of these scenarios in terms of, can a person who is engaging on our online open house exploratory built tool, can they put themselves in this aspect of a scenario and what both their day-to-day experience now and what could be looking at our horizon here in the plan. And what we did was we utilized a type of strategic tool known as transportation personas to inform choices during this outreach round, particularly the second round of outreach. That is, in the process when we had developed and tested our scenarios. And the personas or avatars, they represent various users of the system statewide. We had about six different characters or personas, and they were synthesized through real data and real aspects of where they would live, where they live. We picked different regions in the state, different perspectives on if it's a working parent, say a business person, say a farmer, considering different age groups, gender, race, community of color. We tried to really think about different perspectives. And that really was the key, is that we tried to tell that story in that way and help them understand implications of the plan to their daily lives. And so there were 15 different model inputs that derived five model outputs. Yeah, it was five personas we ended up with, situated in five different areas of the state. And what was really cool was we got feedback from the online follow-ups where people told us, hey, I see myself mostly with this scenario, and I like some of the aspects of what they're saying they're experiencing because these scenarios around these level of investments and priorities are going to mean this for the future. So that to me was pretty novel in terms of public involvement processes for such a thing like long-range plans. And it means that we don't have to have people think, why are you talking to me about the future of 20, 30 years? I've got issues now. And I think this was a helpful way to bring to bear understanding of what's going on now in the system, and that people are experiencing any number of challenges and any number of day-to-day obstacles or opportunities. So I would say this was something we were able to bring to the project that then we were able to relay out. I've actually shared this with peers, and I've gotten some pretty positive feedback for how this is a way to help meaningfully inform those that are not planning practitioners. They're not modelers. They're not engineers. That was a very key aspect in our public engagement. Also note, though, that we had to do more than that to bring information to folks. We did in language focus group sessions, particularly to get outreach to people who traditionally aren't at the table in terms of the decision-making opportunities on the plans, and just trying to get at barriers so they too could relate and understand what this plan means to them, what planning at all means to them.
So our listeners are going to revolt if we don't start talking about MPOs soon. Just to set the stage, Oregon's got 8 MPOs. You've got Portland Metro, which is the big dog in the state. And then you've got 2 additional TMA regions, and then 5 MPOs that serve the smaller regions under 200,000. How were the MPOs involved in the creation of the plan?
One key way we sought to get MPO involvement was in the advisory capacity during the update process of the Oregon Transportation Plan. So a primary steering entity making recommendations of the vision, goals, policies, strategies, and implementing actions in the plan to the Oregon Transportation Commission was known as the Policy Coordinating Committee, that had about 22 members. It included MPO officials. Also, we had more in the weeds advisory groups known as policy work groups. There were about 7 of those. They were really getting into it in terms of the development of the policies and strategies that went into the plan. That's where we involved MPO staff. Also, we had within the policy work groups a modeling advisory work group continually throughout the project. And MPO staff were involved in that too, as technical advisors on how we basically constructed our scenario planning approach and the key inputs, assumptions, and findings from Vision Eval. They were there every step. So that was very important. Now, knowing we couldn't get every MPO represented on all of the advisory committee aspects, we did use and leverage the Oregon MPO Consortium, the statewide group, the acronym and known as OMPOC. They meet monthly. They're a partnership of the 8 MPOs. And the Oregon DOT has a standing member in my executive leadership chain that attends those. We engaged with OMPOC about 4 times during the process of updating the plan. And we provided updates and facilitated discussions on the topics that tied the MPO priorities to the OTP. And then the public comment period was essentially the spring of 2023. I think it was about 50 days. That's where we really got a lot of extensive comments and review from MPOs, in particular Portland Metro. They had a lot to say. And part of it, I think, it's not just the state DOT and Portland Metro have a complicated, and sometimes it's been great, and sometimes it's been actually a little bit tough in terms of relationship. But what was fortuitous, and not something we set out to do intentionally, is that the timing of updating the Oregon Transportation Plan was somewhat parallel to the timing of Portland Metro updating their regional transportation plan. So that actually facilitated a two-way. Not only did they give us incredible good detail and suggestions of how we can bolster certain policies, I had a chance to review the RTP and ensure the kind of coordination with the Oregon Transportation Plan policies and thinking about the myriad projects Portland Metro had in their regional transportation plan, how I knew there was alignment or not with certain aspects of our policy strategies and implementing actions. That just turned out to me to be very valuable.
I think that's great that you had that sort of synergy, it sounds like, with specifically with the Portland Metro folks. And as you said, able to get those plans into better alignment. As we talked about, the plan's pretty new. Implementation is just ramping up. Tell me a little bit about what you expect that to look like and what role you anticipate the MPOs will play in that.
Thank you for the question. We look to MPOs as partners and technical advisors. It's very similar to the way I thought of them in terms of the process of updating the plan. I intend to, for instance, leverage the Oregon Modeling Statewide Collaborative. That's a volunteer group that includes the representatives from MPOs that do their strategic and tactical and operational modeling to ensure we're developing the right metrics to evaluate our work. Huge part of implementation of this plan is how effectively we're able to track and evaluate through the development of performance metrics. One of those major implementing items that's my work, it's my responsibility to help lead, is what's known as key performance target setting around equity, as going back to that aspect of equity being one of our primary lenses on decision-making. We knew getting to the adopted plan, we weren't there yet on how we would look to develop targets that look out to the year 2050. That's what a key performance target is under the priority of equity. Part of it is it's an evolving state of practice in terms of really understanding what are measures of equity for in the aspect of performance. So I have a contract right now with this, a small contract with a firm of subject matter experts. And within the next year, our charge is to develop key performance targets to update into the Oregon Transportation Plan that set out to a year 2050, but then have supportive benchmark type of measures. And that allows me to segue to the fact that implementation of a long-range plan like this needs short-term elements. And earlier this year, the Oregon Transportation Commission approved our short-term element that guides the DOT, known as the Strategic Action Plan, that currently is for the years 2024 through 2028. With that in mind, we know the development of these metrics need to be a good partnering effort with MPOs and local agencies. But in particular, I'm looking towards the MPOs who do their own work, developing metrics, have their own strategic planning efforts. So that's very important. And another thing that would have a tie with MPOs is we have just rolled out a statewide state of the system dashboard. That dashboard is all about relating how we are doing, utilizing our six foundational goals in the OTP as thematic subjects that we can then talk about and show, here's what we're doing in terms of progress. That itself is something we need to refine, develop with MPOs on board, because we want to ensure we're tracking in the way they're tracking towards their strategic aims. I would think of regional transportation plans, for instance, but also there are state rules that are now in place. One known as Climate Friendly Equitable Communities, that is essentially a mandate on how we are going to go forward on the land use context in developing communities in order to achieve reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. These include big changes in parking policies, as well as development. And MPOs are basically the front line of truly implementing climate-friendly equitable communities rulemaking. And that's under the charge of our state agency known as the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And I know different states have do it differently. For us, we have codified land use rules. They are responsible for administrating. So this is just an example of where we have to work quite step in step with NPOs on fulminating plans and getting towards what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, it sounds like you've thought a lot about what that partnership looks like going forward, which is great. Is there anything else that you think we need to know about this, particularly information that's useful to folks who are working at the NPO level?
One, I want to make sure if Oregon NPOs don't already know, then I'm very easy to find and I can be contacted. I really think of the fact that Vision Eval, if it isn't already something that NPOs have utilized in their strategic planning efforts, they really should come to myself and my colleagues that I know can advise on how it can work, particularly at the point where you're in front of needing to do a major update in your long-range planning efforts.
Well, that's great, Adam. We will have more episodes coming soon on Amped Up. So please, as they say, rate, review, and subscribe. And we'll talk to you again soon. Take care.